Real Life, the program that talks about the life of real estate in the Hamptons and the North Fork, the people, the places, and the things that are the pulse and heartbeat of life on the East End.
Hi, this is John Christopher from Real Life, and today I have as my guest Donnelly Blaise, who is the Director of Marketing and Sales for New Developments. Hi, Donna. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Thanks, John. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful, too, especially that you're here. One of the things I want to know, do you think real estate is for everybody?
Absolutely not.
And why do you think that?
It's a very challenging profession. There's a lot of challenges dealing with difficult people, personalities. You have to be thick-skinned, able to take rejection, especially if you're out there trying to build a business. It can be very challenging.
So why would people reject you? You seem very pleasant, very nice, and you know, I can't imagine anybody wanting to reject you, but you think that happens?
I believe when you're out there trying to build a business, you're cold calling and people are not interested and just don't take it personally.
Right. So I know you've been at real estate for some time now, and I really consider you one of the most competent and consummate brokers out there. Do you have any advice or tips that you could give to people that are coming into the business like newbies? You know, they're saying, geez, real estate looks like it's a piece of cake. All you do is take the course and got a license and I can make, you know, big buckos. What do you think?
The advice I would give to anybody coming into the business is it is a business and not a job. It takes a very long time to establish yourself, especially in the community as a professional. The first thing I would suggest is to purchase or get yourself a good CRM, customer records management, so that you could follow up with your prospects, which is very important. I would also recommend developing a great website. If a purchaser is out there looking for property, they're going to be on the internet. They're going to be searching for properties on your website. You would also want to have a blog, which is very important, educating the buyers.
Right. So what attracted you to real estate? You weren't always in real estate. Now, we're going back a number of years, and I've known you, you know, quite some time. How did you get into real estate?
I fell into it. I've always been in sales. I love working with people. My husband and I were looking for a home and found a really great agent, was looking at homes, and she actually said, you'd be really good.
She saw the
potential, right. And I took that opportunity and have loved it ever since.
And you haven't looked back, right?
Never looked back. Love it.
Now, you do developments. Do you have any advice that you can give to developers? Because we've got a few of them, and without getting into specific names or places, some of them do quite well, and some, you know, we were talking about this. Some of the units, you know, in one place that we looked at, they weren't selling, and you had some great ideas. What kind of ideas can you share with us?
Well, as a director of marketing and sales, the most important thing is to listen to what your prospects walking through the door have to say. It's very important. You hear the same thing once, twice, three times. You know what you're doing wrong or what you're doing right.
Yeah, but how can you correct that? I mean, once the unit is built, let's say condos, for example, right? And they've been built and there's a certain floor plan. How do you go and change this when people say, well, you know what? The living room's not big enough, or, geez, I'm looking out onto a parking lot. You know, I'm going to pay this amount of money. Is there anything that you can say to that?
Is there landscaping that can be installed?
Oh, you go to the developer and say,
I would go to the developer and address that.
Right. So getting back to being an agent, what qualities do you think an agent must possess to be successful?
One of the most important things an agent, real estate professional, should have is great listening skills. I think it's very important to ask questions and listen. Many times you will see...
You call that discovery, right?
I call this the discovery, yes. The meet and greet, discovery, asking questions, listen, listen, listen.
And that's why the saying goes that God gave us two ears and one mouth, right?
This is correct.
Do you have any advice that you could give to sellers who are thinking about selling?
Oh, yes. It's very important to stage your home, remove all of your personal photographs. Very important is price your home correctly. Do not rely on pricing your home, which your neighbor has their home on the market for. I've heard oftentimes a seller tell me the Jones's house down the road is priced at. My house is much better. Of course, they're going to think their home is better.
Of course, they always
do. And they're going to increase the price or price at that. Always rely on comps, sold homes.
So in actuality, if you can underprice your home, you probably do better than anybody else, no?
No, you don't want to underprice it. You want to price it right.
Okay, well, that's it. Yeah, pricing it correctly. Conversely, so what advice would you give to buyers that are coming into the market? Anything that you can recommend?
I would think that your buyer out there is already savvy and knows what's going on.
Yeah, because they're on the internet.
They're always on the internet. Buyers should set reasonable expectations on what it is that they can afford.
Mm-hmm. Right, of course. Now, being as a project sales manager, you've done quite a few of these developments. What ingredients do you think makes for the success of your various projects? Because most of your projects that you've worked on have sold out, right? I mean, you're working on another project now. What are some of the ingredients that makes them successful? What do you think?
Right now, I am marketing and selling my 22nd new community. I love what I do. I have been very lucky to work for developers who have listened to what the purchasers are asking for and have made those changes in the community. It all, again, comes back to listening. What is the buyer asking you?
Wonderful.
Or telling you? What are they telling you?
That's great.
Right now, they're looking for open space. I've had developers who have actually made total changes to floor plans to accommodate
that. That's great. Donna Lee Blaze, it's a delight having you on the program. This is John Christopher, and we'll be right back with my next guest.
It's fall pledge time. This is the time when we need you to support Long Island's only local NPR station, WPPB. Every donation counts. Every listener counts. We rely on individuals like you to help secure Long Island's only local NPR station so that we can provide local and NPR programming that makes a difference. Don't waste any time. Go ahead and donate now at 883WPPB.org.
Hi, this is John Christopher from Real Life, and we're back again with my guest, Doug Wald, who is the owner of Resume Stream Media. Doug, you're a CPRW, which is a Certified Professional Resume Writer. How does one become certified?
Well, first, John, thanks for having me today. The Certified Professional Resume Writers associated with the Professional Association of Resume Writers and Life Coaches based in Tampa, Florida. And essentially, there's a test that there's some pre-testing information that you need to absorb about how do you best represent a candidate and apply for any particular jobs that they're applying for. It's a very involved test. It's about a 7-hour exam.
My goodness.
And a lot of people don't even know that there's such a thing as a certification
right.
in this area. But the two of the three modules that are represented are baseline stuff, things around grammatical errors, business things of how to represent a certain candidate. And the actual meat of the test is you receive a 20-page profile of a fictitious candidate, and you have to write a resume, two cover letters, and a strategy document on how do you best represent that candidate. So it has to be absolutely letter perfect. Every semicolon has to be in place. It has to be perfectly represented. And there's about a 6 to 8 week grading period before you're granted the certification.
My goodness.
So I was able to successfully take the test. And it was actually quite fun. I had a good time
going through
it.
Well, you seem like you have fun anyway.
You
like to help people.
I absolutely do, yes.
Yeah. So, has it been successful in the sense for you that a lot of your clients, they come to you and you help them with their resume and then they obtain jobs?
Yeah, for sure, John. Essentially, I've started literally 3 months ago, mm-hmm. as of yesterday. I've signed roughly 50 clients, and mostly in IT, but in various industries and spaces and levels of roles, whether they're students or people at the executive level. And a lot of the practice that I like to take is making sure that candidates properly represent themselves as a brand. I see a lot of instances where people just list the chronology or list the obituary of the things that they've done in the past without really showing the character sets that they have, the core skills or summary or qualifications. And I try and really meld that and making sure that it absolutely identifies with the job requisitions that they're applying for and making sure it's speaking their language. You know, when employers open up a job requisition and hire people, it's about them. It's not about you. You know, so you have to make sure that you're identifying with that language to the recruiter or the hiring manager that's hiring people and making sure it all blends in together. So far, I've had a very good success rate.
That's great. Yeah, now, is it any different between a person that's looking for a job as compared to somebody that has a job and they want to obviously get a better job? Is there, would the resume, the approach be different, or are they
Technically, I don't think the approach will be different, John. Essentially, the old adage still stays true. If you have a job, it's better to find a job than when you don't have a job,
right?
Essentially. So usually it's important for candidates to usually customize their resumes. It's always good to have a foundational or a baseline resume, but you know, changing your keywords, changing things as you're applying into those roles and making sure you're doing the best to identify with that particular role. So it is a little more scientific these days with online databases for larger companies. If you're a baker and you're doing croissants and cookies and puffins and my oh my, and then you're looking for an IT SaaS developer, well, guess what? You're not going to get even through the front door. Right. So you want to make sure that identity is really important and those keywords are important.
Well, that leads me into my next question, which is college graduates don't necessarily have a chronology of employment.
Right.
How do you help them with their resume?
Essentially, John, in that instance where it might be a little scant in terms of their actual real life experience, you know, a lot of other things that could be applicable from experiences. They might be working in restaurants, and I worked in restaurants, you know, in this town for many years. So what type of teamwork, what type of, you know, core skills do you exhibit or that you practice that would be good for an employer? If you talk about leadership, if you talk about teamsmanship, if you talk about a lot of those things that show your character set, you know, a lot of employers are looking for people that have twice the initiative. Then they might be super skilled, but, you know, aren't really that much of a leader in that respect. So it's really good to develop the content that really speaks to those character skits and soul skits.
Your background, you were a manager for a number of companies.
Yes.
What do you think about Zappos' management approach to holography, where basically there is no boss?
It's funny. I've seen both sides of the argument there. I think it might be becoming like a Lord of the Fly situation, you know, where it becomes a little anarchistic. But I understand the reasoning.
It's my way or no
way. Well, right. And I've seen, and coming from the other side of it in the corporate world where, you know, you have 16 different levels of management and and communication becomes muddled, continuity becomes an issue. So I can see both sides of it, but I do see that Zappos, there are a lot of employees leaving Zappos because of that particular structure, because
they need to have structure.
Well, that's exactly right. Right. And I think that's the case where it was considered maybe a innovative way of management and an innovative style of management. But it does seem that because of the lack of not only management, but also guidance that employees look for within that structure. So I'm reading articles about Zappos and how people actually posted on my LinkedIn not too long ago about certain employees see it's very innocuous. The direction is kind of rudderless in some respects. So I'm seeing people actually leave and go back to more of a structured environment.
How long have they been doing that?
Probably in the last couple of years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's a little early.
It's still
relatively
new, and they don't have all the data points that have come back to say X amount of employees have enjoyed that structure and want to stay and become a more prosperous long-term engagement at Zappos versus people that have left and why. You know, so right. I think they're still going through some of the HR data that they've
now,
seen there.
One of the other things that you offer with your services is to get on LinkedIn.
That's correct.
Do you really think that's important?
LinkedIn's huge. For the business community, it absolutely is. Employers
go to LinkedIn?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, LinkedIn's a major source for employers. The thing is with LinkedIn, as is any other content model that you're using, whether it's going to be in social media, traditional media, making sure that your LinkedIn is up to date, making sure that it's prolific, making sure, you know, a lot of people have a baseline LinkedIn with not a lot of information. And again, it doesn't really speak about the candidate. It doesn't really speak about your qualifications. So I advocate to my clients that they populate their content as much as possible and leverage the broader network, leveraged client testimonials that will speak about you from colleagues or management types in that respect. So LinkedIn can be a very powerful tool and recruiters absolutely use it quite a bit.
Just want to touch upon, you're active in this charity event called Sing East End.
That's correct.
Can you elaborate on
that? I sure can, yeah. It's an open karaoke event, interestingly enough. We've been in Riverhead for the last 6 years. The beneficiary is East End Hospice and the Camp Good Grief program for children's bereavement. We run that event once a year. We had it back in June at Granger Bell Park in Riverhead. And we gather a lot of the local businesses, local restaurants for Chinese auction donations and such. We've got 45 singers from ages 4 to 74 singing ABBA to Zeppelin. And and they're really, really fun and really engaged. And we've been able to raise roughly about $30,000 for hospice over the years.
That's fantastic.
And developed a really great partnership with them. So, yeah, sing East End. We'll probably be there in June next year. We're just going to start planning in the winter. So
now, has East End Hospice, I know at one point I had read that they were looking to have a facility of their own instead of coming into
They are building an inpatient facility in East Quogue right now. It's at the inception stage, but it's going to be roughly be able to handle about 15 to 20 patients on an inpatient model. Most of their model is going to be outpatient services when they come to homes and such and care for patients at varying degrees. But now this will be an exclusive inpatient facility based in East Quogue. And I'm not sure when it will be fully operational, but they're, I think, groundbreaking soon. They're going to be in development fairly soon.
Wow, that's great. I think they're a great organization.
Absolutely.
Tell us, how can people reach you?
Yep, we have a website, resumestream.net, and our phone number at Resume Stream Media is area code 631-664-0983. But the best way to get to us is resumestream.net. We've got a very easy website with our services, our growing list of client testimonials that are very happy with our service, and my bio and such. So resumestream.net.
Doug Wald, it's been a pleasure having you on the program.
Thanks, John.
My pleasure. This is John Christopher, and we'll be right back with my next guest, James Eklund, proprietor of the Ram's Head Inn.
It's WPPB's Fall Pledge Drive. This season, we are urging you to become a fundraiser for WPPB. We are asking you to use your social media contacts to spread the word about WPPB. Only you can encourage your friends, family, and colleagues to listen and support Long Island's only local public radio station on Facebook and Twitter. Tell others why you love this NPR member station. Go to 883WPPB.org for more details or to make a donation.
Hi, this is John Christopher for Real Life, and today I have as my guest James Eklund, who is the Ram's Head Inn proprietor and co-owner of Reesh Eklund Construction. Hi, James. How are you?
I'm well, John. And you?
Oh, doing great. You've been on Shelter Island since 1973, right?
Full-time, yes. I grew up there in the summer times as a kid, and we moved full-time in the early 70s.
So the question that begs the question is, What brought you to Shelter Island? I mean, besides going there in the summertime, why did you make it into a full-time commitment?
My parents. No. I came to Shelter Island for a year after I got out of school, and the year extended year after year, and we've sort of just hung on Shelter Island for, you know, since that time, and everything just sort of happened.
Wow. You know? Now, you're talking about your wonderful wife, Linda, right?
Who also grew up on Shelter Island. We met on Shelter Island, though we lived very close to one another in Western Long Island.
I see. Interesting. Right. So you were there in the mid-90s. Well, I should say I was there in the mid-90s, and pretty much at the time, Shelter Island used to shut down for the winter. What was it like back in the 70s? Because you were there in the 70s. What was that like?
Personally, I think it was a little more active.
How so?
Well, I think the people who owned homes on Shelter Island during that time, and into the 90s as well, they had them and as summer homes, and then eventually when they retired to Shelter Island. Maybe they would spend a week or so, 2 weeks in Florida, but for the most part, they lived full-time on Shelter Island. So as the real estate market developed and they sold their homes or their children sold the homes, the people who bought them generally were very well off because the people who had retired there maybe purchased the house for $50,000 in the 50s. Mm-hmm. Now it's sold for $4 million. So the person who bought that home now doesn't see Shelter Island as a winter destination. More so, they probably spend the winter in the islands or some other place like that.
Right, someplace
warm. And Shelter Island only as an afterthought, perhaps.
Right.
So the business that used to be there in the off season sort of has dissipated. Maybe it's starting to come back now, but that's still to be seen. There was a point in time when we were open full time with the Ram's Head, and we decided that for economic reasons, survival, I guess you'd call it, we thought we would just go till the New Year's holidays and then
close
shut
it down
for a few months.
So that's what you do now, right? Is you close it down?
Yep.
Okay. It makes sense because sometimes you're putting out money instead of bringing in money.
Definitely. The faucet, the money faucet is outflowing
from
about December till May.
So let me ask you this question. So that leads me into the next question. What prompted you to want to buy the Ram's Head Inn?
Well, my wife and I individually both loved the building.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. Yeah. I mean, the views are phenomenal. I mean, they're...
It was a place that was sort of magical. Certainly, my parents never took me there as a kid. I don't think I left Silver Beach during my kiddom. But as things developed, I began working at the Shelter Island Yacht Club, and I ran the kitchen and the dining room and the moorings and the whole deal there. And Linda ran the Deering Harbor Inn when it was a bona fide restaurant.
So there was a little background here.
Yeah,
so it wasn't like all of a sudden, no, that looks like a great thing. Let's buy that.
No, well, we'd sort of fallen into the restaurant business.
Right.
You know, we'd all worked as bus people and salad prep people and different things like that. But never our own place, with the exception, for 2 years, we had a little wine and cheese restaurant in Shelter Island Heights. But the Ram's Head became available. We found out sort of by fluke, one of the girls who had worked there for a long time came to us looking for a job, and that sort of initiated the interaction with the Bennett family who owned the inn.
And how long did they own it? Were they original?
Mid-40s.
Oh, really?
They purchased it, I think, just after the war. Judge Bennett purchased it and really never ran it. They had a succession of operators who ran the inn during the course of the 50s and 60s and into the 70s, including our former Governor Kerry and his family ran it for a year in 1976.
Wow.
Yes. So their interest was only in leasing the building.
Right, but not actually operating it.
Perhaps when they decided to sell, they couldn't find a tenant. So they figured, well, we'll try to sell it and maybe get it back again in the future.
So what was the condition? Because it's in perfect condition now. What was the condition like at that time when you guys purchased it?
All buildings are works in progress, no matter what period of time you have them. But when we first got the inn, it was pretty sorry. I mean, it had been used as a disco for the previous 2 years. After the governor's tenancy there, it was run by a young couple who, I guess the 70s got, or they were caught up in the 70s, and which, you know, 77, 78. And disco was popular, but
right,
I'm not sure how popular it would have been on Ram Island in Shelter Island.
I could just hear that going across the water.
The place was done in disco style. They had a lot of plastic lights, and the walls were dark pumpkin, as I recall. And the trim was all black, and there were black
Amazing.
Lights around and the whole deal. And
wow.
it was sort of a mess.
So that's a lot of courage, I mean, for you guys to have done that. I mean,
and it was sort of like the deal went very smoothly, and then we looked at each other, now what? So friends and family came to our aid, and, you know, it was really crazy Chinese fire drill type of action from the time we closed in mid-April, I believe, to the period of time when we opened on Memorial Day weekend.
Wow.
Which, by the way, I would advise no one to open on Memorial Day weekend.
Why is that? Why?
Because you go from 0 to 60 in a matter of moments.
Oh, right, right.
And things are untried, mostly ourselves.
Right.
And just the physical plant were many, many surprises it held in store for us when it actually started operating. you know, mainly plumbing, but other things as well.
Wow.
It's best to start slowly and build if possible.
Well, you know what? We've run out of time, but I do want to have you come back on again. I want to talk about the Chiquit. You know, you had the Chiquit at one point. Which,
sure.
But we'll have you back on that. In the meantime, how can somebody get in touch with you if they want to reach out to you, especially from the construction standpoint?
The best way would be email, I would say, for the construction. It would be james@shelterisland.co.
Co, right. Yep. Okay.
Now, and certainly, we're always happy to talk to anyone.
Fantastic. This is John Christopher for Real Life on Peconic Public Broadcasting, 88.3, right here in Southampton, New York. By the way, if you're interested in hearing this program again or previous ones, you can go to peconicpublicbroadcasting.org and subscribe to the podcast. Until next time, looking forward to seeing you soon, and have a safe journey.
You've been listening to Real Life, the program that talks to the people about the places and the things that are the pulse and heartbeat of real estate on the East End. Your host has been John Christopher. Your producer and engineer is Kyle Lynch. Theme music by John Christopher. Chief engineer, Bob Anderson. Questions and comments can be emailed to johnfchristopher@gmail.com.